Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Yep, he's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. If you just tuned in, if you've been listening already, thank you for that. You know what that makes you, a highly intelligent individual. Rich Galen is our guest. He's the publisher of the twice, often thrice weekly cyber column, Mullings, at Mullings.com. He is a political operative, sometimes a hack by his own admission, and of the Republican persuasion. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, buddy.
It's good to have you back.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
Okay. Today is the first day of the rest of Joe Lieberman's life.
Yeah, big day for him.
What's going to happen?
Well, it's hard to tell.
Set the stage for us.
The issue is that Joe Lieberman, a three-term senator, which Senate terms are 6 years, of course, former vice presidential nominee of the Democratic Party, is being challenged from his left by a very wealthy businessman named Ned Lamont in Connecticut in the primary, which is today, in Connecticut. And Lamont is staunchly anti-war, anti-Iraq, anti-Bush, and has been running this entire campaign on the fact that Joe Lieberman has been too he's been too cozy with George W. Bush and not tough enough on him.
He's running an ad showing George Bush embracing Joe.
Yeah, well, that was right after 9/11. If a Republican did that, then there would be screams and the New York Times would be racing down the Sixth Avenue with his hair on fire for politicizing that. But the fact is that if Lieberman. A week ago, or 10 days ago or so, Lieberman was down 12 or 14 points. He's closed that gap in the most recent poll to about 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've talked about this before on the show, but people vote the way men buy cars. When we think we need a new car, we'll go drive a Jaguar, we'll go drive a Maserati, we'll drive BMWs, and then when it comes down to actually writing the check, we drive out with a Windstar because that's the right vehicle. And that's the way people respond to polls. When it doesn't matter, they'll say anything. When it does matter, they vote significantly differently on, as George W. calls it, voting day, than they do when they're running. So, but let's assume for a moment that Lamont in fact wins. And wins in a relatively close election, which is to say somewhere within 10 points. Lieberman has already taken the steps to stay on the ballot, but as an independent. And then it gets kind of, it gets down in the weeds pretty quickly. But the reality is, I think, for the Democrats here, I mean, the horns of the dilemma on which they will find themselves if Lieberman loses are two. One is that the party will be yanked dramatically to its left, I think. And I think there's a very real chance, because I've been involved in this on our side when we overreached, thinking that we knew all the answers to everything, and we got punished for it. It is not unlikely that Howard Dean and the MoveOn.org and the Cindy Sheehans of the world will become the face of the Democratic Party, the anti-war face of the Democratic Party, and that's a very, very dangerous place to be. When we've got soldiers on the ground in Iraq, and we've got the Middle East and everything else.
So you think that if Lamont wins in Connecticut today, that says more about the National Democratic Party rather than merely the Democrat Party in Connecticut?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there's no question about that. I mean, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, those two pro-Israelis, have been in their mm-hmm. campaigning on behalf of Lamont, assiduously. Hillary Clinton, even about a couple of months ago, did something that was odd. She was asked, now this is when everybody still thought that Lieberman was likely to win, but she was asked if he loses the primary and runs as an independent, will she support him? And she said no, she'd support the nominee. And okay, you can make that case, but the reality is that somebody with her skill and experience should have just said nothing. Said, well, I don't think he's going to lose, so it's really a question I don't need to answer. But
right.
She chose to answer it, so...
Mm-hmm.
So I think this may set up a 2.5 or 3 month battle for the soul of the Democratic Party.
So you think it's going to happen? The soul of the Democratic Party, the direction of the party is really, this is what's going to happen today is more than just a senatorial primary in the Democratic Party in Connecticut.
Yeah, this is a metaphor for which way the Democratic Party.
Well, you know, in a Wall Street Journal op-ed yesterday, Martin Peretz said that Ned Lamont, Lieberman's challenger, could become Karl Rove's dream come true.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. They will overreach. The rest of them, the real America, may in fact become frightened at the notion of having these people run, in effect, foreign policy in a time when it's very dangerous.
I'm going to call Martin and tell him, you know, he failed to attribute that quote to you. Stand by, Rich.
Wouldn't be the first time.
When we come back, I'm going to do a little Republican bashing right after these messages, and then we're going to move on and talk about a little other politics and what's going on in the Near East and the Middle East. 20 Tales, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Rich Galen. He is an outstanding political operative. Many of you have seen his smiling face on the talk shows, CNN and Fox, and who knows where else. I don't think he's ever been on Hardball. Have you ever been on Hardball, Rich?
Not for a while.
Well, I think you should be back on there. I think you'd be a good addition to that show. And Rich, your website is Mullings.com, right?
Mullings.com.
Twice weekly. When's it going to be thrice weekly again?
Right after Labor Day.
Okay. All right. Well, I can't wait. I only get two a week now, and I need three.
The archives all the way back to 1998 are on.
I guess I could go back and look at thousands of them. Yeah, I'm not on methadone yet, but I need my thrice weekly fix. Okay, Rich. One quick comment on Joe Lieberman. I think Joe Lieberman may be the most patriotic, the most honest, the most admirable senator that the United States has today, because he has the courage of his convictions. But when he sees something that is right, even if it's opposes his whatever ideology he may have, if it's the right thing to do, I think Joe does it. I think we need more Joe Liebermans on both sides of the aisle. And if the Democrats allow Joe Lieberman to lose because of his honesty, then I think that says a lot about what kind of a tent the Democrats have.
Well, you know, and you make an excellent point. These are the same hand-wringers who scream about the good old days when there was bipartisanship. But this goes back to something that a lot of us say all the time, that for the left, bipartisanship means do it my way.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So here's a guy who is the quintessence of bipartisanship, and they've turned on him like dogs.
Yeah, it's very sad to see that. Okay, I want to move on. I want to bash the Republicans some, Rich, because I'm very upset with them, and this is not the first time my audience has heard me say this. The Republicans have played politics, and they played fast and loose in doing that. They played fast and loose with the minimum wage increase. As you know, the House passed a minimum wage increase. They tied to it a number of amendments, I think, not the least of which, in fact, the largest of which was the estate tax issue. And
right.
The only thing that Democrats hate the estate tax more than they love minimum wage increase, they play politics with that to try to get, and admitted it. In all the coverage, Rich, I never heard a Republican say, we're going to raise minimum wage because it's the right thing to do. All they said was, we're going to raise minimum wage, and literally said, so we can get an advantage over the Democrats in the fall. It passed in the House. It didn't pass in the Senate. They believed that that's what would happen. So minimum wage went down. Republicans got their edge over the Democrats on that issue. But in the process, what if it had passed the Senate? We'd have a $2 an hour minimum wage increase, which would be hurting small business owners. And I'll tell you, Rich, I don't appreciate that little game of politics they played.
Well, you know, all I can say is welcome to the NFL.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, the same small business owners that would be helped by the extension of the death tax, you know, the getting rid of the death tax. you know, I mean, ain't nothing free. So
well,
you got to trade something for something.
Yeah, but I can wait on the death tax. Once
yeah.
minimum wage is established.
Yeah, but I'm older than you. That's more.
only by a month or two. Anyway, I needed to get that out, and to whatever degree, I know that the Republicans are quicker than their boots that I'm talking about them on the air, but that's my thought on that. Okay, let's move over and talk about, before we leave politics, local U.S. politics, what do you think is going to happen in the fall? What's your prediction now?
I think as of right now, and again, you know, it's different from actual election day, but I think as of right now, it's probably 60-40 the Democrats will pick up the House, and 60-40 the Republicans hang on to the Senate.
Oh, wow.
So if you want to see a minimum wage increase, pal, wait about 4 months, and you'll see what comes down the pike.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, well, we've made a note of that, Rich, and we'll be holding you to account on the middle of November.
I'll deny it.
We have archives too, Rich. Okay, let's move over to the Near East, which you tell me they still have a Near East desk.
Yeah, they have a Near East desk at the State Department. Yeah,
yeah.
Nobody ever calls it. Now everything's lumped together in the Middle East. Everything pretty much from the Sinai Peninsula all the way to
from Greece to Tibet
is now in the Middle East.
Yeah. Well. Well, next time I go to the State Department, I'm going to ask them to show me the Near East desk.
It's a small desk. It's over in the corner. It's got a nice little flag on it.
Okay. The fighting over there is still going on. Yes. Israel is pushing north to the river. I've forgotten the name of the river.
Litani River.
The Litani River, exactly. Thank you. And showing no signs of letting up. The Hezbollah is still firing rockets into Israel.
Yep.
And they're still hiding behind civilians. And then when the civilians get hurt, they're still claiming that the Israelis don't care about civilians.
Right.
And the Europeans are falling for that for the most part. But the Americans and the French have been working on a ceasefire deal, right?
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I had dinner with, although it wasn't just one-on-one, it was about 20 people, with the Israeli ambassador at the front end, the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. at the front end of this thing. The fighting had only been going on for 3 or 4 days. And it was interesting that that even then he was concerned about the fact that the Western media, led largely by CNN International, was showing the worst of the casualties in Lebanon, but pretty much ignoring casualties in Israel. That's number
right.
one. Number two is that the notion of having to put everybody in place so that when a ceasefire happens, you're in a good position is what the Israelis are dealing with right now.
That's what they're trying to get to right now. Stand by. Quick break. We're going to come back to this topic, and I'm going to ask Rich about Iraq. What's going on over there? What's going to happen over there? He's kind of an expert on that topic. Stay with us. 10-7. Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, getting a great report from our good friend Rich Galen. Very smart guy and knows a lot about politics, knows a lot about what's going on around the world. And he writes about it in his twice, soon to be thrice weekly column, Mullings.com, his cyber column, which you can subscribe to, right, Rich?
Yes, indeed. All you have to do is go to the webpage and click on the free link up on top, and you get it. The other thing I'm going to start doing, I'm practicing now, is I'm going to also podcast it, which is kind of an interesting.
Rich the Podcaster.
The Podcaster.
I can't wait to get my subscription. Jack, I'm glad you're doing that. Rich, it shows that you're getting with it.
I'm with it. That's
yeah.
exactly right.
I've always said that about
you. I know about 8-inch nails and toe jam. I know all those things.
I've always said that about you, Rich. Any last thoughts on the Near East before we go to the Middle East?
I think we pretty much covered it. I think that by and large in America, there other than the West Coast, there is a enormous level of support for Israel and what they're trying to get accomplished.
What do you think is going to happen? Where are we going to be over there in a month?
Oh, I think the Lebanese, with probably Saudi and Kuwaiti and other Arab soldiers, will set up a defensive barrier.
Hmm.
Somewhere between the Litani River and the Israeli border.
18 or 20 mile buffer zone is what they're wanting. But disarming and defeating Hezbollah is really not going to happen, is it?
not right now, but this is certainly a step in the right direction, and it really does glaringly show the deficiencies of the United Nations, which has had observers in the midst of Hezbollah for 6 years, and either chose to ignore the fact that these Katyusha rockets have been coming in by the truckload, or just didn't know it. Neither.
Which,
so either it's malfeasance or nonfeasance.
By the way, today is the 61st anniversary of the United Nations.
Yeah, good day to put up. You know, I think plywood on the windows and move it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Okay, let's move over and talk about Iraq. Mm-hmm. Here's my question to you, Rich. Has the current state of affairs in Iraq with what our generals are calling maybe a civil war could happen any time, could be the result of what's going on over there, at least in the central part of the country, has that current state of affairs in Iraq become the best thing that could have happened to Iran?
Well, it's the best thing that could have happened to Iran in that they keep the pot boiling. That's in the near term, but I think in the longer term, what it does is it does give credence to the U.S. position that Iran now is the really bad guy in the world, and especially the Chinese and the Russians are going to have to come to grips with whether or not they are comfortable having Iran really control everything from. You know, from Kabul all the way over, in essence, to Cairo.
As you predicted, the Democrats were overplaying their hand with Lieberman. Have the Iranians overplayed their hand in Iraq with the Shia uprisings and with Hezbollah in the Near East?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's happened, and a lot of that was specifically to take the pressure off their nuclear operation. But you know, that's the world's a big place, and the United States is a big place, and the UN's a big place, and they got people who can concentrate on more than one thing.
Can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah, but I think that just to finish up on Iraq, it would not shock me if Iraq did end up in three pieces. And the big winners when it's all over will be the Kurds up north,
mm-hmm.
who has been stable since the day I got on the ground there, and it's stable today.
But what's that going to do for the relationships with Turkey? Turkey and the Kurds don't get along all that well.
Well, I don't, as far as I'm concerned, after the way the Turks have been acting, they deserve a little bit of aggravation.
Mm-hmm. Some people are saying we should engage Iran and say, look, guys, you know, you guys want to, you know, you got to stop doing this. To engage Iran, not just try to isolate them, but to engage them and bring them into the world of nations. What do you think?
Well, if you could do that, that'd be fine. And I mean, I believe that one of the endearing and enduring beliefs is that the population in Iran is so different. From the populations in Saudi Arabia or Lebanon or Jordan. I mean, these are Persians for the most part, not
right.
Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember that the government had to put down riots among the university students,
right.
Not last year, but the year before. And it put me in mind of the only thing, the parallel I drew was Romania,
mm-hmm.
when Ceausescu was still there. The students rioted, and he put that down, and the miners rioted, and they put that down. But when the students and the miners got together, they killed Ceausescu. So, it is not impossible that the net result of all of this is that in reality, the government is overthrown from within, and it becomes a very Western
that could happen
nation,
in that
quickly.
Could happen in Iran. I agree. Hey, Rich, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, sir.
Rich Galen, ladies and gentlemen, that's Mullings.com. Don't forget to subscribe to his cyber column. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'll be back on the other side of the news. Don't go away.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.